Well, incidentally, I should mention that we have the, on an experimental basis, the audio recordings on the course website available. I'm not quite sure how they will work, but we are trying it and see. Hopefully, that they will be of some use. But that's an experiment we are trying this semester, so we will see how it works. The one thing about these files is that the files are rather large. So they are in MP3, so they are fairly efficient in terms of encoding, but still for the whole lecture, so they are relatively large files. So how many of you have high-speed internet? Okay, if you have high-speed internet, probably might work if you try it. But of course, you don't have to listen to them, but they are available in case you want to hear them. So we are looking at the MIPS instruction set. Sometimes we abbreviate that as instruction set architecture. Now, instruction set architecture actually refers to basically, I guess, what an assembly or machine language programmer would view. The hardware architecture internally, hardware implementation, could be different. So, for example, you have many different versions of Pentium. Chips, and if you have a program compiled for Pentium processor, it should work with any of the chips. But internally, these chips could be implemented differently. And for example, if you have the AMD chips versus the Intel chips, then of course, the AMD people are not allowed by law to steal Intel's design. So, they can take the instruction set architecture, so they take the instruction set architecture and then they implement it independently without looking at how Intel has done it, because if they copy Intel's design, that would be stealing. But it is legal to take the instruction set architecture and implement it independently. So, so we are looking at instruction set architecture right now. And now, as I was mentioning, it is a RISC processor. That is how it got started, reduced instruction set computer. So instructions are fixed length. (32 bits) And only a few formats. We are going to look at instruction set formats. So we'll talk about the three formats used by the MIPS instructions. Now, when we say MIPS, we will generally mean the subset of MIPS that we are going to look at. Because if you look at full MIPS, then there's more. And so having fixed length instructions, that simplifies the design of instruction fetch and decode. Although sometimes the instruction may not be completely efficient. Now, one very important feature of a RISC machine is an architecture which is a load store architecture. And by that we mean, if you want to, you have the processor and you have the main memory. If you want to work on an operand which is in the main memory, you have to load it, work on it, and then store it. So within a single instruction, you cannot operate on something in memory. So to do something in memory, you have to do load or store. You can do register to register things immediately. For example, if you want to add two numbers, you can add one number in one register, one number in another register, that is allowed. But you cannot add one number in a register and one number in main memory, that is not allowed. So it allows for a fast implementation. So as a result, the instructions are very simple. And simple instructions can be implemented in a way that can make the implementation fast. They are easy to pipeline. Now we will later talk about pipelining. Basically, the idea is that several instructions are active at the same time. And they are in different phases of execution. And that is referred to as pipelining. So this is a way of implementing parallelism. Now there are some disadvantages. If your instructions are simple, you might need more instructions. To do the same thing, compared with a CISC processor, because in a CISC processor you can encode an operation which can do something complex. You have a limited number of addressing modes. We'll talk about the addressing modes we have. And very few complex arithmetic instructions. Now this is actually how they got started. And as I was, so this is how RISC is generally defined. So fixed length is a characteristic of RISC. Load store architecture is a RISC. Limited number of addressing modes, that is a defining attribute of RISC. However, as time progressed, they figured out that you can combine some features of RISC and CISC and have some nice implementation. So you have some complex instructions. Now in recent years, there has been a need to support media-related operations, graphics, sound, and so on. So they have added extensions of the instruction set. Most of the processors, and so on. So they are typically added because those are things that are commonly encountered. But if the MIPS version that we will see, it doesn't have any of the complex instructions. Now, before we look at the instruction set, let us see how an instruction is processed. So right now we are going to look at a very quick overview, and later we will, we're actually going to design the whole thing in hardware. So we are going to look at it in more detail. Now the MIPS processor, the design that we will have, we will assume that we have a instruction memory, so here we have the instruction memory. So in our design, preliminary design, you will assume that instruction memory is separate from data memory, although in that is actually a deviation from the traditional what they call von Neumann architecture. Because von Neumann, when he came up with his architecture, he suggested the idea that you can have the same memory, and the same memory you can have instructions and data. But in the simple design, hardware design that we will look at, we will assume that instruction memory is separate from data memory. So here we will have the data memory. And then here we have a register array. So here we have the registers. And here we have the arithmetic logic unit. Now, arithmetic logic unit is the unit that performs the arithmetic and logic operations. So basically an arithmetic logic unit is a large combinational circuit that can do, for example, take this number and perform an addition or perform a subtraction. And we are going to have a separate data memory. Now this is a simplified diagram. It doesn't have all the details in there. And we have a program counter. Now everyone remembers what the program counter? Program counter is the register that points to the next instruction that will be fetched and executed. So this is where instructions are. So this is from where instructions will be fetched, and they will come out here. And here we will have the instructions come out. And now we will assume, now MIPS is a three register machine. So you can do an addition which can involve register A, register B, and you can add the result and put the result in register C. So you need to be able to address three different registers. So here you have the three registers, a capability to address three registers. Let me do it this way. So here you have a register, here and here we have a register. And so you can address three registers at a time. Now the instruction that comes out, now instructions are 32 bits. And if you have an instruction which says add this register, put the result in this register, so the instruction will provide the information about what these registers are. And it will specify what operations we want to do. So there would be some control logic here that later we are going to look at in some detail. So control logic looks at the operation code of the instruction, and it decides what operation needs to be done. And it will generate the control signals to activate the operations needed. And the instruction will also sometimes supply one of the things that need to be involved in the addition. Now you write into here we have the addresses, and here we have the data. Now we are assuming instruction memory is a read-only memory, so we are not putting any data there.
But the data memory, we need to be able to write data, and we need to be able to move data from the data memory to the array of registers. So this is the data out, and you can move things into the registers. So notice here that typically in a processor, program counter is in the processor. These are parts of the processor. The memory usually is outside of the processor. Although in this diagram, they are kind of interspersed. So you have these, coming back to instruction processing, let's look at the phases of instruction processing. Oh, incidentally, we will put the first lab assignment on the web this afternoon. So later this afternoon, we will put, and this lab assignment is going to involve using the circuit simulation package, which is Logisim. Has anyone tried that yet?
It works quite nicely.
But you still need to allow enough time to get familiar with it, if you haven't used anything like that before. So make sure you allow enough time. So in the beginning, you need to fetch an instruction. So that part is instruction fetch. Okay. So basically, that means use the program counter to address a memory location, and from there get the instruction out, and that is instruction fetch. And next thing is instruction decode. Now here, basically, the control logic looks at the instruction and it decides what this instruction is, and it will decide how it will go ahead and implement that instruction by generating, this is going to generate some control signals, and these control signals will control the flow of information in the rest of the processor. And now in many cases, you need to read the source operand. Now the source operand would sometimes come from here. Source operand or operands. And after you have gotten the operand, you will perform some operation. You will do the execution. And let us assume that you are trying to add contents of two registers. Then you will perform the addition, and the result would be available here. Let me add one more data path here so that you can put it back. And after you have executed the instruction, you need to write the destination operand. So let us say we have the result of addition of two registers available. Now in some cases, what you want to do is to put it into the destination register. And
That will basically take care of instruction processing. Now it turns out that different instructions may require different amount of time to finish the operation. We are going to look at that later in more details. Any questions or comments so far? Okay, now let us look at the MIPS, we can call it the programming model. Now this is what you need to be familiar with if you want to write machine language or assembly language programs. And let's first come to registers. Now there are 32 general purpose registers. Now actually I'm fudging the truth here a little bit. Even though I'm saying that these are general purpose registers, it turns out that some of them are not really general purpose registers, but usually they work similarly, even though there are some of them that are really kind of reserved for specific purposes, but we will say that they are general purpose registers. Now, some of the registers are special. Now, there is register 0. Now, we will refer to the registers in a couple of different ways. MIPS accepts a couple of different conventions for registers. And incidentally, you all have a copy of this, right? This came with the book. I hope they have fixed the typos. There are a couple of minor typos there. Now this is, now they could have done a slightly better job of organizing this information, but I guess it's quite useful. Now you will see a table there where it says the register name and register number. So you can refer to a register by its number, or you can refer to a register by its name. So you have a register 0. Now this is one way to refer to a register, dollar sign followed by the register number, which is also called register 0. Now this one is always 0. Now it turns out that a lot of times you need a 0. For example, sometimes you need to add a 0. Does that make sense, adding a 0 to something? Why would you want to add a 0 to something? It turns out that we would need to do that. And what they did was sometimes you simply want to move something from here to here, and there isn't any instruction available that says move this from here to here, but you can do this. Take this, add a 0, and put the result here. So, sometimes indirectly you want to do some things, and some of those things they require a 0. So 0 is another useful number to have. So they have this 0 always available, conveniently in register 0. Now there is register 31, which is the highest register address. You have 32 of them. So this was the return address. For subroutines. So when your program calls a subroutine, when your program calls another function, you need to save the return address somewhere, and the return address will be saved in register 31. And if, let us say, if you other registers may be reserved. By convention. So usually when you're writing assembly language programs, typically you follow some conventions, and these conventions require you to make some assumptions, and I will mention about the conventions later. Now, in addition to these 32 general purpose registers, and remember that it is a 32-bit machine, so these are all 32-bit registers. Now there are two other registers that we will sometimes use. We have two registers called high and low. Now these registers will be specially used for multiplication and division. Now if you add, if you take a 32-bit number, multiply it by another 32-bit number, how big would you expect the result to be?
Do you think it will always fit within 32 bits?
No.
It could be bigger, right? So when you do multiplication, sometimes you need double the size.
So that is why we have this special pair of registers, high and low. So they kind of go together. So high and low together will provide you a 16-bit place for the result.
And they're also used for division. We will talk about them in later, how exactly we use them.
Now the register called program counter, which we have here, basically, it holds the address of the next instruction. So basically, this keep track of where you are in the program execution. So when after you have executed
one instruction, you fetch the next instruction. And when you fetch the next instruction and you start working on it, near the beginning of this execution of this instruction, you are going to increment the program counter by an appropriate number.
So for each instruction, this is going to be incremented. Incremented by what number? Will it be incremented by 1? If you want to go to the next instruction?
Yeah.
By the size of the instruction. So you need to say each instruction size is, in MIPS, the smallest addressable unit is a byte, which is true for all processors today, almost all.
Of course, your LC3 that you may have used in 270, that was kind of an exception.
So when you want to address the next instruction, you need to increment the program counter by 4, right? So So basically, you increment it by the appropriate number. That's the idea.
Is that program counter part of the original 32 general purpose registers?
No, it's separate. So this is a separate dedicated. So here you have a 32. So these registers, these here, are the 32 registers. So this program counter is separate. And these two registers, high and low, they are also separate. So these are separate registers. Now you also have separate floating point registers. Which is a separate set of registers, and most of the time you will not talk about them, but when you will talk about floating point operations, we will refer to the floating point registers, but that is a separate set of registers. They are used only for floating point operations. In the early processors, early microprocessors, they did not implement the floating point operations. So you could buy a separate floating point processor and plug that in, and that separate processor would supply this separate set of registers. But now, of course, everything is within one processor. So you have separate units for the floating point operations. Question?
For the high-low, separate units from the 32?
Yeah, they're also separate from the 32 registers, that's true. So these high-low registers are also separate. So you have these 32 general purpose registers, and you have high-low, these registers. You have the program counter, and you have separate floating point registers. Okay, now we will come back to the registers shortly. But let's go on to MIPS instructions. So let's start with the MIPS instruction format. Now, as I was mentioning, they decided that they want to come up with a RISC design. And as part of the RISC design, all the instructions are the same size. So they came up with a few instruction formats, and so they have divided the instructions into these types. So you have the instruction computational instructions. And these are the instructions, for example, add, subtract. Those are computational instructions. And there are two types of format they are used: R-type and I-type. And I will explain what these are. So R-type instructions are used for register-register operations. Add contents of this register to contents of this register. Put it in the destination register. I is for immediate operands. So take contents of this register and this immediate number, put the result somewhere in a register, and that we will use I type. Now other type are load and store. Now if you want to work with things in the main memory, which is outside of the processor.
So what is the I type? Is that like
move? I type is it's an instruction type, but that we are going to see it in just a few minutes.
Okay.
So I will show you exactly how they look like.
in just a few minutes. Load store instructions, they use also the I type format, and we are going to see in a few minutes how these formats look like. And then you have finally jump and branch instructions. Now we will use I type for branches. And there is something called J type for jumps. And there are some R type also. Okay, now let's look at these different types that I have talked about. Let's look at first the R type instructions. Now, can you guess why we call it R type? R is for register. So basically in R type, we refer to three registers. And here is the format. You have the operation code, which happens to be six bits, from bits 26 to 31. Bits 26 to 31. Is that six bits? 26 to... Yeah, I guess that should be six, right? Okay. And now the registers. How many bits we need to specify a register? You said we have 32 registers.
Five.
So we obviously need 5 bits to specify a register. So we need to specify, so one of the registers we will term RS, and other register we will term RT. This part is the operation code, which specifies the operation. And RD is the destination register. And these two are the source registers. And then we have a field which SHAMT. Let's just ignore that for now, shift amount. And the reason is that this field is actually there when you want to perform shifts. So, and there are some instructions that you shift, but we are not going to look at them right now. So much of the time we are going to ignore this field. There is, however, a field which is called the function field. And this uses bits 0 to 5, these 6 bits. So actually function field and the opcode, they work together. So if you want to figure out what instruction should do, you take a look at the operation code, and in many cases you also have to look at the function code to figure out what particular operation it is. Now I'm going to later give you some examples. Or well, why don't we look at an example right now. I'm going to show other instruction format, but let's look at a quick illustration. Here's an assembly language instruction, which says add contents of register 8, I'm sorry, contents of register 1 and contents of register 2, and put that in
register 8. And here is a comment. Now this means that whatever comes after this is a comment. That is the assembly language syntax. So for example, you could say, now usually this is actually a bad comment. Now if you have a comment like this in your assembly language program, that's probably a bad comment. Can you say why?
Sorry, that's the way.
Yeah, basically this says what this is. So once you are a little familiar with the assembly language, you know that this basically says the same thing as this. So it is for us, when we are getting familiar with the instructions, that it probably makes sense. But once you have gotten familiar with it, your comment should be more descriptive. It should kind of describe to somebody who's following the program about what is that you're planning to do. But anyway, this is the format. And in binary, it will look like this. So you have the operation code, 6 bits. And now add would be given by 6 zeros. See this, you have 6 bits there. So 6 zeros. Okay, we have to make sure we count as zeros and ones carefully. And for add, the function part, I should make sure I have enough space there. The function part is, which is 6 bits, is supposed to be 1 followed by okay, 6 bits function code. You have the 6 bits there, and I think I have a typo there. Let me make sure I write that correctly. The function code for add is 20 hexadecimal. So 20 hexadecimal, that is 0 and then 20 hexadecimal. So that is 10. Okay. I was reading this reference data card. I think here I had 10 missing. You need 5 zeros there. Okay. And now the destination, the shift amount. You do have the 5 bits for shift amount, but we are not specifying any shifts. So we have 5 zeros there. And now the destination. This is the destination. And the destination, the way things are arranged, so this is RD, and that is a register 8, and 8 is obviously zero, 1 0 0 0 248, right? And then we are left with RT and RS. So RS is register 1, so we need 5 bits, 0 0 0 1, and RT is this is RT register 2, 00010.
Any questions or comments on this?
So the basic idea is that you have appropriate fields, and
as a designer, they came up with this format. So you need to be able to specify the right number of registers. You need to be able to specify the operation. And occasionally, because everything has to add up to 32 bits. So occasionally there could be some fields which
for a particular instruction don't do anything. That will happen occasionally.
Any questions or comments?
What is the difference between operation and function?
What's the difference between operation and function? Yeah, that's a good question.
That is actually a result of how they decided to do it. So it turns out that for some instruction, these 6 bits are enough to specify what the instruction will do. However, for many of the instructions, actually 6 bits are not enough. So this function field is kind of an extension of this. So sometimes, for example, if you want to figure out whether this is really an error, you will know by, you have to look at here and you have to look at here. So they are actually connected for many of the instructions. For example, for arithmetic instructions, you need something specific here and you need something specific here. So if you take a look at this card here, in this card, if you look at the core instruction set, for example, if you see here, now here you will see there's a column which says opcode slash function. So there it says opcode should be 0 hexadecimal and the function code should be 20 hexadecimal. So this is what we have, 0 hexadecimal. Oh, did I say 20 hexadecimal? I should actually say 20 hexadecimal. To be strictly correct, of course, but I guess usually it should be clear from the context what we mean if I say 20 hexadecimal. So to specify the operation correctly, you need the appropriate thing here and you need the appropriate thing here. So many times you have to have the right thing in both of them for some of the instructions, just like this says here. However, for some instructions, like if you look at here for branch instructions, this has some other function. For branch instructions, you simply need to look at these 6 bits and you will know that you have a branch instruction. We are going to talk about that shortly. Was there another question or comments? Okay, let's look at the next instruction format. Now for these other formats, what I will do, I will show you the format now and give you a detailed example later when we come to those instructions. So this is the R type and let's look at I type. Now I stands for immediate. However, this format is sometimes used even when it is you are not talking about immediate addressing. But anyway, this format goes by the name immediate format. And the format looks like this. So you have again 6 bits of the operation code, the same 6 bits. It's 26 to 31. And you have two registers. So you have a register RS, you have a register RT, and you have some immediate data. And this immediate data takes 16 bits, 0 to 15.
Now we are going to come to these instructions later and look at them in some detail later. So so for example, we have an add immediate instruction. Take contents of this register and this register. Oh, I should say it differently. Take contents of a register and take an immediate number and add the two and put the result in the destination register. And that would be immediate addressing.
And I will show you what instructions are available there. And it is also used by load and store instructions. And there we need to take a look at how the addresses are specified.
So this is the format, but this field has a slightly different interpretation. And we will talk about it when we talk about the load and store word instructions.
Is RT there considered the destination register?
Question is RT, yeah, in this case that is true.
RT is indeed the destination register, that is true.
However, as I was saying, this I type of format is used in other situations. So for example, we will use it for the store instruction. In the case of a store instruction, actually you're storing into a memory location. So there is really no destination register. But so right now let's not specify here destination register, but we will when we will talk about individual instructions that do specific things, we will come back and we will see how this format is used.
What happens for large numbers over 65k?
Oh, you mean what if the immediate number is bigger than those 16 bits? Yeah, that's a good question. What if the number that you want for immediate operation is bigger? And answer it that...
Maybe we use the other field?
No, because the field is fixed. So, yeah, that is a limitation actually. So, remember, this is a limitation. So, if this is a number, and typically this is a signed number, that means one bit for the sign, and you have 15 bits available. So there's a limit to how big an immediate number can be. Now if your number is bigger, then you do something else. Probably take that number, put it in a register, and pick it up from a register and do a register to register operation. Don't do immediate operation. But it turns out that in most cases, or a lot of cases, the immediate operand needs to be very small. For example, let us say you have a table and you are accessing successive elements of the table. And each entry in the table has a certain size. Maybe each entry in the table is perhaps 4 bytes. And for some reason you need to increment something. And when you are setting up a pointer, you need to increment the pointer. So you will increment the pointer by 4. So oftentimes, a lot of times, you want to add or subtract something rather small. So in a lot of cases, this is 16 bits is plenty for a lot of immediate operations. But anything bigger, do something else. Now we will come across such limitations elsewhere also. So for example, this is also the format used by load and store instructions. So when you access memory, this is the field that you have available. You have 16 bits available. But your addresses are all 32 bits. It is a full 32-bit processor. 32 bits of data, 32-bit addresses. So how do you specify a 32-bit address using this instruction format? And answer is by combining these 16 bits with something else. Somehow you need to get 32 bits. And we are going to see very soon how we do that. Basically, you have to add something to it to get something that will be 32 bits. Now, another format is J-type. And J is, of course, for jump. And now, again, actually, the same question arises there. These 16 bits will tell you that this is a jump. And here, you have, let's see, how many bits are left? So you take away, let me say 6, yeah. Take away 6, so 32 minus 6, that is how much? 32 minus 6, so that's 20, is it 26? Yeah. So here you have 26 bits. Now how can you use 26 bits to come up with a 32-bit address? When you jump somewhere, you basically jump to some address, right? Where you have some memory location. So how are we going to find those 32 bits using these 26 bits? And we are going to see there's a nice technique that is used. And we were, in fact, we are going to talk about it very shortly when we talk about the MIPS addressing modes. And time to do that is almost here. But let me first give you an overview of the question.
In the R-type instructions, can we have the destination same as one of the source registers?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Can the destination register be same as a source register? Yeah, that is allowed. Yeah, that is true. So you could have destination register same as the source register.
You can have the same source
register. Or you can have, you can have two source registers which are the same. Yeah.
They all be the same.
Or they could all be the same. Yeah. So let's say if you want to, you have something in a register, and if you want to multiply that by 2, what would you do? Well, one way would be to use the multiply instruction. In the beginning, we are going to pretend that instruction is not there. So one way to multiply a number by 2 is to add it to itself, and that's like multiplying it by 2.
So yeah, that is, I mean, so it's totally, there's no restriction. You can have any, choose any register there. Of course, remember, register 0 is always permanently 0. So there's nothing you can do about that. So remember, we have the processor. And we have the main memory. Now, a couple of lectures ago, we were talking about the cache. Now, you have the cache memory, which if you have bought a computer recently, you have probably thought about how much cache it has. And cache is something that goes in here. But we are going to keep our perspective relatively simple, so no caches during most of the time during this course. Now, so processor has a lot of storage here. So you have the instructions and you have the data. And actually, in case of the way we will implement it, we will have the instruction memory is separate from data memory. But later on, we are going to do a better, we are going to do two designs. First, we will do a simple, somewhat primitive design.
we will have two different memories. And after that, we will do a little bit advanced design, where we will actually have just use one memory for both things. But anyway, there's a main memory where you have data and instructions. So now you have some registers here. So here are the registers. And here you have the ALU. So now the R-type instructions, they kind of work here. So the R-type instructions. For example, get two registers, put the result in the third register. That would be an R-type of instruction. And I-type of instructions, they work this way. So for example, when you want to get something from memory and put it in a register, or the other way, you will use an I-type of instruction. And I'm going to come back to this format and I will show some illustrations later on. And then you have well, J type of instructions, and J is of course a jump, so it doesn't involve registers. So J would not involve any registers. Okay, let us look at now the MIPS addressing modes. Now, as I had mentioned before, MIPS is it was developed as a RISC processor, and one of the philosophies behind the RISC processors was that they want very few addressing modes. So it doesn't have any fancy addressing modes that used to be there, for example, in some of the processors. For example, there was a famous processor, PDP-11. There used to be things called mini computers. Has anyone heard about them? Mini computers? Okay, some of you still remember mini computers. So, well, first, the computers used to be like, they would take a room. So anything that will take only a cabinet would be considered a mini computer. And then, when the first microcomputers came out, so a microcomputer took only a box. So then the first microcomputer was the there was this box thing, which was, I think it was developed for hobbyists. So the Altair or some such name. And actually, we used to have one of those lying around in our department for several years, and I guess we threw it away. And we didn't realize that that could be a collectible item, right? But if we have it, it probably has some value now. I don't know how much it is worth, but I still have an old laptop, and I haven't thrown it out because I'm hoping that it will become a collectible after a few years. But I don't know if it is there yet or not. Okay, so let us look at the MIPS addressing modes. So basically, the question is, how do we address something using the MIPS instruction set? Now, one form of addressing mode is immediate addressing. Now, in case of immediate addressing, the data
is in the instruction. So as I had mentioned, where you have this format, so here you have an immediate number, and that we call that a form of addressing. It's right there in the instruction itself. And secondly, we have register addressing. So you are, let's say you have one operand which is in a register. How do you address that operand? Basically, use register addressing. So you use the 5 bits. For example, here, those 5 bits, they specify a certain register, one of the 32 general purpose registers. So that is a form of addressing. And then, now let's come to something a little bit more interesting. This is what we will use for load and store, base addressing. So basically, we have an instruction that looks like this. Let me show a diagram here. And let me draw it a little small so I can squeeze in other parts of the things here. So here you have the operation code and the two registers, and here you have the immediate field, but in this case you have a part of the address. Now, even though I'm saying this is address, it's actually not the complete address, but part of the address. So what happens is that, let me check something. Okay, what was that I was going to check? Oh, okay. So here you have these registers, RS, RT, and this is opcode. So now the register, register RS serves as a base register. So basically, you take the, you pick up these five bits, and these bits are address of a register, and you then take contents of that register. So here is whatever register is specified. So this is the base register. Now, base register, of course, is 32 bits, right? So you take these 15 bits, and you take these 32 bits, and you add them. Now, incidentally, this is not exclusive OR operation. It is, I mean, a simple arithmetic addition. And this will give you the memory address. So notice that this is 16 bits, this is 32 bits, and this is 32 bits. Now make sure that there's no carry out of when you do the addition. So you cannot point it to anything outside of there, the space, obviously. So whenever you're referring to a memory location, it has to be, of course, a memory location that is within the allowable address range. So this is how you get. Now, why is this a useful thing to do? So notice that you can, if you want, adjust the value of the base register and access consecutive things in a table. You only need to update it by the appropriate amount.
Any questions? Now this is how load and store is going to work.
This is the only way load and store instructions are going to work. We are going to look at load and store instructions in more detail shortly. And then we have program counter relative addressing. Which is somewhat similar, program counter relative addressing. How many of you have seen used LC3? How many of you have not used LC3? Okay,
so you may have used something else which is similar. Incidentally, if somebody took that course a long time ago when they had LC2, did anyone use LC2?
Okay, because nobody took the course that long ago. So LC2 was had a different, slightly different feature. But LC3 uses PC relative addressing. Now the idea is that sometimes you want to specify in a program something like this: jump ahead by 10 instructions or go back 20 instructions. And that is program counter relative. So you want to say, relative to the current instruction which is under execution, you want to go back or go forward. You can branch either way, both in positive or negative direction. And that is PC relative addressing. So basically, now this format is still the same. So you have the operation code and these things, and here you have the so-called address in the immediate field, and you take contents of the program counter. So here is the program counter, and you do a simple addition. So this is 16 bits, 32 bits, so here is the address. Now this you will use for branching, when we will talk about the branch instructions. Remember this, these 16 bits here, that is a signed number. It could be positive or negative.
So does your instruction memory keep a list of the instructions from your source code in order? That's how you jump around, or is this, it's just the instructions hard-coded into the instruction memory that you jump around inside? Does that make sense?
So I guess your question is that, let us say that this corresponds to going forward by 15 instructions. So is it, once the program is compiled, then is it always going to be 15, or can you adjust it dynamically?
Well, yeah, so I mean, let's say we have 10 instructions, we want to jump 10 instructions forward. Would we put an offset in that address worth 10 instructions, and inside the instruction memory, it's just going to jump that much and be at that next instruction, or are the instructions already hard coded and you have to jump to that specific instruction, wherever it might be in the instruction memory?
Yeah, so basically here, once your program is assembled or compiled, then basically you cannot change the instruction itself. So every time you will come to that branch instruction, it will jump ahead
by exactly the same number. And now there are some details there that we need to look at. So the exactly how you figure out if you want to jump ahead by 10 instructions, how should you calculate the amount of jump? That is something we need to talk about, because there are some details involved there. But basically, an appropriate number there. So we will look at that when we will talk about branch instructions.
And that instruction then goes back to PC, correct? Because of all the branches that change the program.
Yeah, so because the VR is related to the program counter. That is true. So that's why we call it program counter related.
And also, does the branch instruction from the opcode know to go directly to the program counter as your register, or do you have to put it as your source register?
No, it will automatically know. So basically, so question is, will these 6 bits say that this is a program counter related to a branching? Yeah, so this will actually tell you that this is a program counter related to branching, so you don't have to specify program counter any other way. Program counter, of course, is not one of the general purpose registers, right? It's a separate register. So we'll continue next time. Oh, and there will be an assignment, which would be a logic design assignment. So we should have that on the web sometime this afternoon. And we will give you a week to work on it. I hope that should be fun.